We are talking with Daniel Estlin. Welcome back, everybody. This is the second hour. We're talking about his latest book, Trans Evolution, The Coming Age of Human Deconstruction. So let's get into this idea a little bit of what potentially could be done at this time, Daniel. What do you think could be done to begin to operate in a good way, steer it in the right direction, maybe get the right people in place and all that stuff? What I see anyway is that there are going to be two different kinds. I mean, BBC even ran an article about this, I think a couple of years ago now. They talked about another future insight. They tried to determine what would happen with the human species. And they said it's going to develop into two different strands, basically a super elite and then this kind of, midget underclass kind of thing. Almost like H.G. Wells in The Time Machine a little bit. And if what you're talking about is going to occur, then it's kind of a version of that to a certain extent, that some people are going to, jump on the technological bandwagon. They're going to have the resources and abilities to do that, while, other people are not going to be able to do that. And therefore, you have that kind of split occurring. But is there any way at this point, do you think that this could be stopped, or are we on just an inevitable track? And what is going to happen is going to happen because the momentum is so strong at this point. Where are we?
You cannot stop this. It's impossible to stop this. It's impossible to stop this, first of all, because the elite, the people who control the world, are in control of this technology. You cannot stop this because the governments who run the world, or people behind the governments who run the world, are in control of this technology and they want this developed. You can talk about, for example, the drug trade and crime. If the United States government really wanted to eliminate crime, they could do it overnight. But the thing is that the same goes for the education. The reason we have the debasement of education and the reason that kids in America can't read and don't even know the name of the state that they live in is because the government gets what it pays for. They spend a lot of money on education, but the level of education is lower today than it has ever been before. I think people have to understand that it is being done on purpose. You get what you pay for. And if the government wanted something else, they would have gotten something else. Yeah. But they don't want that. Which is the same applies to the high tech. You cannot stop it, nor do you want to stop this. We need this technology because we need to go into space. We need, for example, we're talking about the energy resources. For example, we have to go to the moon. We absolutely must go to the moon. Why? Well, there are many different reasons. Natural resources is one, because moon is also a stepping stone for us, to go into Mars. The moon harbors important reserves of helium-3, which is a very rare isotope on Earth, which is the ideal element to realize nuclear fusion. Mm. Okay, now we need that because there's enough fuel on the moon to meet the present energy needs of the entire planet Earth for about 2,000 years. And helium-3 is a natural decay product of radioactive tritium and is the most effective and the most efficient for the production of thermonuclear weapons. But also, the industrial materials processing on the moon will be significantly different than what we can do, with conventional Earth technologies. Because we need incredible amount of water, chemicals, and other, volatiles that don't exist in the lunar environment. So the point is that we need to go to space. We need to conquer the galaxies. And we need to be able to do this because, technologically speaking, if we don't have the technologies, when you get to a point where there's going to be 10 billion people on a planet Earth, you're going to have a collapse in the population because progress and development is directly proportional to population density. So if you have progress, if you have technology and technological development, you're going to have wealth and more people on a planet Earth, something which the Rockefellers, which is just a metaphor for powerful people, they don't need 10 billion people. They don't need so many people because more people means less natural resources, food and water for them. And for them to eat, we have to die. And a lot of people feel that, this doesn't make a lot of sense because the idea is that the Rockefellers, they need 10 billion people, they need, a better economy so they can sell the trinkets to us. They don't need to sell us anything. They already control the entire planet Earth. For them to be better off, we have to die. And this is exactly what they're after. So as they're destroying technology for us, they're increasing, the use of technology for them to the point where, they literally feel they have become immortal. And the point is that what you said before, dividing into different races, as in some of these high tech or science fiction books of the past. We already have that. We have the great unwashed, and we have the elite.
Yeah. Now, what about the potential of the when or if the machine, if you will, turns the AI turns against mankind? Just to make a quick reference to all the movies that we've seen out there now, from Terminator to Matrix to the, you know, Elysium and all these movies, they show pretty much, you know, how things potentially might go down. And in that scenario, you have, in some regards anyway, you have a machine kind of inadvertently, iRobot is the same thing, it turns on mankind basically to deal with their extermination. I guess Terminator, that trilogy is that franchise is the best, you know, visual kind of what you could get of this. But I've always speculated that what if they actually are still going to be very much in control of the AI that actually turns on mankind, meaning that it's going to be another one of these, whoops, we don't know what happened, it's running amok on its own, we can't really control it anymore. But at the same time, think about it, you could literally write into the centralized, you know, intelligence, save this person, save that person, don't touch this guy, the rest of them can go, you know what I mean? And we could literally deal with another situation where a depopulation plan, a war between man and machine, would be completely run from the few men in charge who actually have control over the machine. And all the meantime, we would say, all right, we never knew what hit us. It was just an accident. And there's a number of ways that this could go down, and the way that they could use this technology as depopulation, Daniel. That's what I'm getting at.
You know, again, you have, you know, the Terminator, but, you know, the movie that the Strategic Trends Report refers to as the future, you know, blueprint for humanity is actually Blade Runner. Okay.
Right.
So you have, you know, Terminator, Blade Runner, RoboCop. The new RoboCop deals a lot of these techs. G.I. Joe 2, for example. You know, that's a good one, especially, you know, if you're dealing with nanotech. There's another film which discusses all this kind of stuff, Prototype, which hasn't quite been made yet. You know, I just they only have the a short little clip of it, but that deals with singularity. Transcendence, that's coming out next month with Johnny Depp. You know, that talks about a guy, Johnny Depp, who is the world's famous transhumanist scientist, who is actually, you know, killed or mortally wounded by a terrorist from an anti-tech organization. And as he's dying, what they do is they upload his, you know, mind, his consciousness onto a computer. Then this guy decides to use consciousness to take over the world. Well, that's, you know, I really want to see that film. Gattaca, that was another great film with Jude Law. That's from way back when, you know, talking about synthetic biology. Public Enemy with Will Smith, you know, NSA tech. I Am Legend, as you said. Moon, that was another great film.
Yeah. Definitely.
Okay.
Yeah.
You know, dealing with cyborgs and you know,
clones.
Exploration. Yep. Minority Report. That's a good one. Do you remember in Minority Report, Tom Cruise's character, John Anderton, he has this radical surgery to place his eyes.
Yeah.
So that he can get past security systems that scan his retina to identify him.
Yep.
And he's like lying in a tub, recovering from his black market procedure. And these tiny little robots, they kind of sneak into the room and scan his eyes, you know, in an attempt to track down the fugitive future crime officer.
Yep.
Okay. Now, the ability to scan retinas to identify people is straight out of science fiction film. But outside of this, you know, spider-like drone bots, this is very much present and near future terms. In fact, engineers at Southern Methodist University are working very closely with DARPA to develop a new type of eye scanner that could identify a room full of people without their knowledge. It has a name, they call it Panoptis. It could locate and scan a person's iris regardless of the distance, and even if they're not looking at it directly as you need to do it now. So a lot of these films, you know, and of course then you have Avatar, which we discussed earlier, and this great video game. I don't play video games, but I certainly know the game, and I've seen all the, you know, ads for it. It's called Deus Ex.
Yeah.
Okay. And Deus Ex. And if you haven't seen it, go to YouTube, check it out. It's an amazing, amazing product, you know, created by a Montreal company in Canada. And boy, it talks about everything from the Illuminati to world control, domination, world government, you know, future technologies, you know, brain enhancements, augmentations, all this kind of stuff, which, you know, we're dealing with right now. And we see, you know, front and center, and how a lot of these techs in this video game, people are using it to replace they're perfectly, you know, functioning body parts, and then suddenly, you know, you need to spend a lot of money to actually get this thing to work. It's like, you know, being hooked on heroin.
Yeah, it's just amazing what is out there already, and also, of course, what is in development right now, from the drones to some of the developments of Boston Dynamics, who's getting a lot of money from DARPA, of course. There's a tremendous amount of not only black budget money being poured into this, but just official research money, and it's starting to become really really you know, actually well run kind of machines in at this point, you know, getting over obstacles. And to a certain degree, it was this big dog video they had out a while ago when it was running over the ice and stuff, and it's like it looks really creepy these days, you know. They're getting really good at it.
Well, I mean, it's only logical. Technology, you know, it advances at breathtaking pace, and because we have nanotech and now we have these amazingly complex, you know, algorithms, it's just a matter of time because, you know, before all this stuff literally fuses together. And of course, you know, the greatest game changer is again nanotechnology.
Now, there are a potential of number of vulnerabilities in a system like this, not only on the fact that very much of it is still, you know, it's electricity, it's energy consumption, and with the natural environment that we exist in, there are a number of things that could upset this, specifically if these are centralized system, then would the worst it gets. If they get smart enough and breaks it up into, divisions into smaller cells and pockets, it might be much better. But if it's all connected, and if you have anything like enough solar activity with the, you know, any kind of CME or a polar reversal or anything like that, basically the whole grid would go down, the whole electrical system, and we would be back to square one. And of course, the potential in a scenario like that is that if mankind are 3, 4, 5 generations into something like this at that stage, where they, you know, not only wipe our butts, but they feed us our cornflakes in the morning, you know, these robots or whatever, mankind will be so incapable of handling anything on their own that we wouldn't be able to know how to start fire. We couldn't, you know, build an engine. There's nothing we could do from scratch. That's what I see as one of the potential real big depopulation things that would occur if we get so dependent on this system that are taking care of us and pampering us in all ways and ways. And then when it suddenly goes out, hackings or whatever have you. What about that kind of scenario, Daniel?
You know, I think the scenario of nano weapons turning against us and destroying the entire planet is a much likelier scenario. And you know, and nanotechnology is, you know, has been a real game changer. And the whole thing about nano weapons and nanotech, which is, you know, obviously at a very, you know, much smaller scale, needless to say, a nanometer is 100,000 times smaller than your strand of hair. Now, what happens is when you get to, you know, that kind of size, materials start to act in unimaginable ways, and it's a space in which quantum behavior begins to replace the Newtonian physics. But in any case, in science, in any direction you go, whether up or down, if you go far enough, you hit limits set by physical law, quantum mechanics, speed of light, gravitational forces, etc. Now, what basically happens with these new weapons, nano weapons and nanotech? If you compare nano weapons to nuclear weapons, it'll be like comparing, you know, bow and arrow, that'll be like nuclear technology, you know, to a guy with an M16 or, you know, a Kalashnikov.
Yeah.
Okay. Or, you know, or I don't know, a grenade launcher or a Katyusha. Okay. There's simply no comparison. And now what happens is that the intelligence of nanotech will not be in one nano robot. It'll be a collective intelligence of trillions of these nanobots working together and pooling their thinking resources. And of course, you can program nanobots specifically so that they attack only people with certain characteristics. You know, that's Hitler's and everybody else's wet dream. Now, you can send them out to take out people in the most secure locations because they're just so small. And what these nanoweapons do is they attack a target at a molecular level and then use the molecules of their target as raw materials to replicate more copies of themselves. So in this way, you have small amounts of these replicators could have the capacity to destroy large targets very, very quickly. They could devour plants, animals, and needless to say, ultimately, people. And this is how wars will be fought in the very near future. And so this, you know, molecular manufacturing raises, you know, the possibility of horrifying, you know, effective weapons. Okay.
Yeah, I think it was DARPA was kind of in the hot water a little bit while back because they had developed something that allegedly could, you know, perpetuate itself on human flesh. And they continued to deny that they had developed it. But actually, there was a couple of stories a year or so before that that seemed to indicate that, which basically would be a robot that kills a human, eats its flesh, and thereby, you know, extract energy from it and moves on to the next target kind of thing. Great.
That's what nanobots are programmed to do. This is exactly what they're programmed to do. I mean, it's if they didn't do that, they wouldn't be doing what they were supposed, you know, what they were created to do. They, you know, they're there to do this. And because, again, you know, they use the molecules, because it's a living organism, of their target as raw materials to replicate more copies of themselves.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So needless to say, absolutely this kind of stuff exists. And absolutely this stuff is real. And if they put out an article out there, you know, it wasn't an accident. These things are never done by accident. It was out there. It was a trial balloon to see the reaction of the people. They see the reaction of the people, see how they react, see who says what to whom. They use their media to create, you know, false stories or semi-true stories. They use that to create characters in films or, in cartoons. And suddenly this stuff, which a few weeks ago, you know, was this mind-boggling, terrifying beast, suddenly becomes okay because it becomes part of the norm, using social media, television, Hollywood, etc. And suddenly all these things, and again, look at the stuff being actually put out there on television. You have, I think it's Fox, if I'm not mistaken. They have it's Fox. They have this new series called Almost Human, where one of the main characters is a cyborg cop.
Intelligence, a guy with the implant, is basically the superhero in the show because he has a connection to the worldwide mind, if you will. Yeah,
exactly. You go back to the point of neuroscience and nervous systems or the advancement, and they talk about this in the film, in the series, you know, chemistry, computer science. And who owns Fox? You know, who runs Hollywood? You know, who is behind all these operations? The most powerful people in the world. And it's there. It's a mind control operation, obviously, and it's there to make sure that when you finally see it in real life, you will say, I've already seen it on television.
I wonder if it's partially not only to desensitize people and kind of just, you know, acclimatizing people to what is to come, but also just the basic idea of actually bringing more interest to the field from people who are younger today, who, you know, in 10, 20 years, maybe even, you know, 5 years from now, are going to go into some of these fields. And as we know, it has to be an idea sparked in human consciousness first and in our, you know, creative processes before we can actually make it and create it. So I think it's a way for them to you know, to try to instigate this kind of momentum of this different field of what could be done. I think there are things, people with ideas out there that no one even have, you know, manifested yet, that is yet to come. So we'll have to see where that goes. But what in terms of opposition to anything of this do you think could be possible? I mean, today we have, you know, hackers, we have certain people who are, you know, try to do certain things to keep, you know, the internet open and free and everything else. There's nothing that would say that there wouldn't be, you know, I don't want to call them terrorists, of course, because that's what the government would do. But nonetheless, people who would adapt, you know, technologies on their own, nanotechnological bots they develop, what have you, to go after either certain people and everything else. This will be a continuation of the buildup of attack and defense that we've seen in any field, really, like, you know, bacteria and antibodies or something like that, right? If we just continue this process.
You know, I think on a positive level, you know, just to pick up what you said just, you know, a few seconds ago, is that, you know, there's some very positive implications in all this tech. Again, tech is an amazing thing, okay? And for example, space program, which is a very easy example, I go back to the, you know, to the 60s, to the period of JFK, to the period of hope for humanity. The idea of space program, it typifies the idea of man as having a purpose in the universe. Okay? So when you're living for the future of mankind, for the future of mankind is going to be, then our existence has a reason. On the other hand, the empire of money, which is what all these people are, you know, they depend upon suppression of scientific development and knowledge, by keeping us backwards and dumb, and we don't want that, okay? If you listen to the elite, there's no such thing as a scientific principle. And the problem here is the conception of what the truth is. In the Bilderberg, you know, the globalist-led system, it doesn't exist. The truth doesn't exist because it is an imperialist system. No truth, only the arrogance of power. However, when you're living for the future of humanity, okay, you realize that we need technological progress, scientific progress, cultural progress, not merely to become richer or more powerful, but because, as I said before, we need to be mortal, as no animal can be. We need to participate in the discovery and application of universal physical principles that no animal can do. And when we find our motivation and our morality in all of these scientific principles, we become morally invincible. And this is what, you know, greater good of humanity is all about.
And do you see a resistance in that to where this is taking us down now? Is there a prospect therein, a hope, if you will, in trying to thwart this or turn it in a different direction?
Well, absolutely. I mean, they debased education and destroyed everything out there that, you know, morality. You have the entire generation of people, well, the only thing they know is what they've seen on a television set. You know, a generation of people who get all their knowledge, you know, from a Twitter or Facebook account, who have never read a book in their lives, who have never written anything, you know, a poem, you know, or an original thought. It's everything that we do is, you know, our smartphone, and our entire lives are in this telephone. So you can't expect anything from this generation of people. But needless to say, as I said before, this is being done on purpose. If they wanted the education to go in a different direction, the government certainly has the capacity to do that. And what they've done, okay, is they've created this outcome-based education, which is basically a vicious suppression of creative powers of reason. These distinctly human mental capabilities expressed typically in the form of valid, axiomatic, revolutionary discoveries in physical science. Now, the proper purpose of education is not to prepare the young for some predetermined social status in adult life, which is what they do in Switzerland. You get to be 14, you can actually pick a job and you become a welder or a carpenter. And then you work, you destroy families, you feel you're an adult, you have the money, you can actually buy alcohol and drugs, and, you know, suddenly you do, again, go into the cycle of what the society, you know, the grading of society is all about. Now, the only moral purpose of education is to develop an entire population up to a level of scientific and moral knowledge necessary, not only to perpetuate society at no less than its present level of power in the universe, but to carry the process of development of the whole population one step upward. And this is the moral level and the purpose of cognitive potential of each and every person in the universe, or you can call a citizen of the universe, of the planet Earth.
What can you say about how things are being degraded right now, as well as a kind of a, not only demoralization, but everything else that occurs that is turning mankind against anything that basically is natural, or the natural understanding of things that we have? It's just a tremendous onslaught of creating this kind of artificial bubble around young people at this time as well. And I feel that it has an interface with the transhumanist movement to kind of just I guess separate mankind from a natural understanding of what we can observe on the planet, what we know about the physical reality and everything else, to kind of create them separately and to in that way control them better, and in that way kind of try to keep them in this artificial biosphere, if you know what I'm getting at. I mean, this has to do with, as you say, education, of course, but also just social engineering, and on top of it, propaganda and everything else. So it's a tremendous obstacle that we have to try to, you know, free people and make them understand and see what actually are part of, as opposed to this new artificial empire that they're building.
You know, the power of the kings comes from the willingness of the masses in allowing them to be our kings. Now, empire is what we're talking about. It's not some king sitting on a gold-plated throne. Empires are above kings. It's a system of control. It's control of everything by the moneyed system, by the international, you know, financial system controlled by international banks. Now, if people are to participate in self-government, they must participate in the ideas, by which society is self-governed. This would mean the end of oligarchism. Nations who foster the creative mental development of their population produce a people who will not tolerate, under any circumstances, oligarchic forms of rule indefinitely. Illiterate, technologically backward, great unwashed populations will. In fact, there is a little doubt that illiteracy and technological backwardness are contributing causes for the emergence of oligarchical rule. So again,
right.
It's a moral problem, a problem of our destiny and how we, the people, understand the role that we play in this enormous, magnificent, fabulous, and beautiful universe that surrounds us.
Yeah, yeah. I agree with you, definitely. How do you think that we can connect with this again? I mean, it has to be a natural spark in people that's just there and willingness to participate in this and understand what we have around us to try to improve things as opposed to just, you know, degrade them or break everything down as seems to be the kind of the ideas of these times. But how can we connect with that again if that's something that people are lost, you know, have lost?
That's a good question. Give me a second to think about it.
Or in the bigger context, basically how if there is a propaganda scheme to implement this to keep people away from what we've been talking about, and how do we fight that system? How do we, you know, through the education, through the media, through the propaganda and all that stuff, how can we reach through to people, you know?
You know, truth always lies in the higher order of processes. True sovereignty, for example, lies not in popular opinions, but in the creative power of the individual human mind. The cultural diversity is not only our, you know, hallmark of progress, but an insurance policy against extinction as a species. And once born, a nation state, which is what these people are trying to destroy, the idea of countries, this concept never dies. It only waits for courageous and sane human beings to come to its defense to perfect the concept. So, you know, the way I see it as we should be a fraternity of nations, you know, fatherlands working together, not as one globalized state, but as countries working together, of sovereign nations united by a common purpose for humanity. Until we can bring mankind into this age of reason, I think history will be shaped in actuality not by the wills of masses of humanity, but by the mere handfuls who, for the purposes of good or evil, steer the fate of mankind, generally as herds of cows are steered to and from the pasture, and also occasionally, as you well know, to the slaughterhouse.
Yeah, I know. What do you think about violence and wars in terms of what we can see ahead? Is that an does mankind have to defend itself at some point and try to, you know, stand up against this? And of course we have that already around the world. that's the common the common denominator that we can see right now with expansion of the empire and everything else. So it's not that that's separate from it or that we don't have that, but nonetheless, more taken to the Western world, we can see, for example, the militaries around the world are preparing for urban warfare. It's all going to be in that kind of environment. It seems like a kind of a perpetual civil war against the people who will rebel against this type of empire building that we're seeing, right?
Well, that's why, you know, they're foreseeing this. That's why they're talking in the Strategic Trends Report about the, growing gap between majority and a small number of highly visible super rich, which is likely to pose an increasing threat to social order and stability. They're getting ready for this collapse. They're getting ready for this war between them and us. And this is one of the reasons, again, as I said before, the technologies being developed, you know, today, okay, are not there being developed to stop the terrorists, not to help humanity. They're there to make sure that the 99% are stopped dead in their tracks. You said Elysium before. That's a great example. You create a synthetic system in space between the moon and the earth, and you live there if you have the money to do that. And as the wealthy have gazillions of dollars, and we already have the International Space Station, well, it's only a matter of time before we create one of these and send all the wealthy up there, and the rest of us will just continue living here, you know, downtrodden in a society destroyed by hunger and disease. And if people don't understand it, they better wake up, because it's all around us.
You know, in Elysium, they show this basically incredible just machine that you can, you know, jump into, and you push a button and you can cure cancer and all the rest of it. You know, just kind of, and that's kind of the golden nugget in the movie as a way to, like, that's what they're seeking and that's what they want to get. You know, everyone want to get their hands on everything else. It to me, Daniel, as I'm looking the advancement of these kinds of properties, if you will, within technology and medicine and everything else, there always seems to be a something yet again that we have to fight against in terms of, you know, the within the medical or what happens with our body. As you said before, it's like this perpetual taking of drugs to be able to just maintain the implants in our bodies or something like that. And it seems that we're always going to, as we try to solve one problem with the technology and with the medical, you know, chemical, what have you, another one is going to arise. And it's a constant, again, it's a constant battle. And we seem to me, it seems like we're walking the wrong path towards creating a healthy human being, if you know what I mean.
Well, it depends who is walking the wrong path, because if you're talking about the elite, I'm absolutely convinced they don't take the drugs that we take, which is why you have all the Rockefellers and the Queens living to be 100 years old.
Right, yeah.
There's a reason for that. You know, and it's the rest of us who are being drugged to death, which is the whole point of the Rockefeller-controlled, you know, medical cartel. And they control it the same way as they control the food cartel and as they control the oil way back when. That hasn't changed at all. It's the whole drugging of America and the whole drugging of the world, you know, to destroy us, which is one of the reasons you have, I think it was something like 250,000 people die on a yearly basis, you know, from taking the wrong pills just in the United States alone.
Yep. Well, why do people not see that, do you think? I mean, when people are begging for, you know, universal health care and everything else, they are begging for the Rockefeller medical establishment type of medicine. You know, I can't understand why people don't see that.
Because it's you know, it's not on the front page of a newspaper. You know, it's that's how the media controls us. You know, somebody said to me not too long ago, they said, you know, if what you say is true in my books, then why isn't it on the cover of the New York Times?
No.
Yeah, you know, well, yeah, that's a good question. Yeah, okay. Well, you know, it's not on the cover of New York Times or the Washington Post or Time Magazine or CBS, NBC, whatever, you know, other stations are out there. It's because the media forms part of the global cartel, which is why they attend these private meetings like Bilderberg, Trilateral Commission, Council on Foreign Relations. They're part of this interlocked cartel juggernaut. And the reason that you have the biggest banks in America owning significant portions of the New York Times and the Wall Street Journals and the Washington Posts is that if you control the media, you control the outflow of information, which is why New York Times, the Washington Post, or no one else out there ever talks about the Citibanks, the Bacovias, Hongxiang corporations, you know, being in the drug business.
What do you think we'll see in the next, 5 to 10 years down the road? And do you think there will be any obstacles in their path towards what they try to achieve? We have the 2045, for example, coming out of, what is it, the initiative there from the Russian, I forget his name now, but the Avatar project and everything
Itzkoff.
Else.
Dmitry Itzkoff.
That's right. How is that just overambitious, or do you think they actually will get there?
I think they're already way beyond what we actually imagine. Technology will increasingly dominate the world. It already does. I mean, you know, you leave your smartphone at home and you can't live. Suddenly you have, you know, no one to talk to. If people call you, you have no way of getting to them. If you need to check something, you don't know how to, because you're the only one on the subway without a smartphone in your hand. You feel like an outcast, like a moron. So technology will obviously dominate the world as populations, resource exploitation, and potential social conflict grows. Therefore, the success of this convergent technologies priority area is essential to the future of humanity. And so this whole idea of transhumanism, which basically fills people's hopes and minds with dreams of becoming superhuman.
Exactly.
But the fact of the matter is that the true goal is the removal of that pesky human free will itself. And post-humanity will be a new human, which has been genetically engineered and brain-chipped for total control, be it part man, part machine, part whatever. This new individual will no longer have the need of the sexual reproductive function. And if the elite's plan is to reduce the world's population, I can't think of a better way to do that.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I think they have ABCD kind of four steps in the Avatar project, different milestones, and they talk about 2015 to 2020, a robotic copy of a human body remotely controlled via BCI, brain-computer interface.
Using this type of technology would dramatically prolong lifespans. And, you know, you say, how long? How about forever? How about forever? In one generation, you know, we have gone from genetically modified plants to genetically modified animals. And it's just only natural that the next step is genetically modified humans. I mean, you can't escape it.
Yeah, it's talk about overpopulation, though. If we had, again, as you said, just to clarify that point, this is not for everybody in that regard. This is for the very select few. But nonetheless, if you had a contingency of an increasing number of people living forever and forever, unless you go to that last step that you talked about of actually leaving your body behind and uploading your, you know, consciousness to a computer, then you're in a different play zone. Then you're literally in the matrix as well. But I mean, I think it's also built on a faulty science. That's why I think certain of these things that they are aiming at actually won't succeed. I mean, I think it's a limited view of what a human being is, for example, to think that we can just replicate the neural network as they're trying to do with the Blue Brain project, and thereby kind of instilling consciousness within a simulation, within a quantum computer, and that will be able to contain or hold the essence of what a human being is, or the consciousness of that. I think that's a limited view, Daniel. What do you think?
Well, because, you know, that's because we, most of us on the planet Earth, still think in terms of human beings. The people who run the world are not concerned about what we look like. You know, they're not concerned about flesh. They're not concerned about bones. They're not concerned about whether we have hair or not. They're not concerned about physical appearance. To them, immortality is a different concept. It's a concept of living forever. And for them to live forever, all they need is their consciousness. Okay? And that's the whole point, the separating this divide between them and us. We still think, you know, as people, and we still say they won't be able to do this because as human beings, but they're not thinking about it as human beings. They're playing by a completely different set of rules. For them, post-humanity is something completely different than how we understand humanity and consciousness, virtual reality, you know, uploading, you know, our brain onto the computer. It's a completely different concept, which is why, again, immortality to us is maybe something like out of the Highlander movie. You know, you live 1,000 years, you know, you're a bit grayish around the edges, but you're still, you know, in good shape. Right. Well, you're 1,000 years old, for Christ's sake, okay? But to them, that doesn't matter what you physically look like. It's not the point. It's a different concept of humanity, or I should say, of a being, because it no longer be human.
Well, exactly, right. So in the process, they're literally turning themselves into something else. They lose their humanity along the way, and to them, that might be even, a good side effect of that issue to actually, in their view, maybe, you know, cleanse themselves from those issues of you know, the human condition, if you will. And that's an improvement to them, I guess, right? That's a way to,
I think, one of the things about this book, Trans-Evolution, and the subtitle is The Coming Age of Human Deconstruction, is that, again, we are being deconstructed as beings. What will become of us in the future, we don't know, because we're extrapolating what we are into the future. But the point is, we will come out as something completely different, which is why, going back to what I said at the beginning of the show, is we're standing at the cusp of the greatest evolutionary change in the history of mankind.
All right, Daniel. Well, this is a very important topic. There's a reason we've been following it for so many years, talking about it, trying to get information out about it, and I'm glad you've written a book about it. I'm looking forward to diving into more material in the book as well, Daniel. But is there anything else you'd like to leave us with? Of course, we want to give out the details again, not only about the website and where to pick up the book and everything, but if there's anything else out of the book that we haven't really talked about that you'd like to give out in the last few minutes, please go ahead.
No, I think we've discussed it extensively and in depth. The book is, again, Trans-Evolution, The Coming Age of Human Deconstruction. You can buy it, if the listeners are in the United States, you can buy it anywhere, and, you know, pretty much in every store out there. The first print run was very, very important. But if you're not, you can pick it up at Amazon.com, or you can go right to my publisher's webpage, trineday.com. Chris Milligan, a great man who puts out amazing books, the kinds of books that very few companies out there in America actually have the nerve to publish, all the knowledge.
Definitely, Chris Milligan. We've had him with us before. He's a great guy out of Trine Day over there. We'll have the link up to their publisher as well, some other books there. But thank you again for your time today, Daniel. Please keep up the good work, and good talking with you again.
Great. It's always a pleasure to be on your show. Thank you so much for having me.
All right, folks, that concludes our program for this time. We have upcoming on Red Ice Radio, Ulla Damegård, David Icke, Brian Forster with L.A. Marzulli, Marty Leeds, and then later also Yuri Geller. That shall be interesting. Don't miss that one. Also at Radio 314 with Lana has Ben Shapiro up next. You can, of course, tune in whenever it works for you. All the programs and everything else available at redicemembers.com. Also, can recommend to check out our RSS feeds if you haven't already. Subscribe to those, and you can get the latest programs coming directly to you as soon as they are available. It's a really good way of listening and tuning in. You can, of course, get it to your Android, to your iPhone, iPad, Kindle, Windows Phone, whatever you use. Please check our FAQ on the members' website for more on what apps we recommend and the simple instructions on how to add the feeds to your device. And before we end for this time, I just want to say thank you to all our members for your continued support. Also, my thanks to Frederick, Lana, Elizabeth, and John, everyone at Red Ice. We'll be back in just a few days. Take it easy, and we'll talk to you soon.